that's just the way it is. Some things will never change.
All right, folks, that's welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. Jay, what are you doing, buddy?
Hey, Steve. Oh, man, what am I not doing this morning? Holy cow, busy morning. Busy.
Like, you can't make a statement like that.
I'm doing Muskie Shop stuff, but I was waiting for you to call so we can start here, and I was catching up on Sasquatch Theory on YouTube. Nice. I don't know if you watch that show.
Okay, yeah. You did have a busy morning. Important scientific research.
Yeah, and this one's based in Hayward. Okay, so prepare yourself. Yeah, the host Todd, he had this guy John on from Chicago, right?
Yeah.
Who vacations.
The poles,
and in September of 22, he was up on a muskie fishing trip, and
elevated,
he heard a Sasquatch.
Really?
So, based on his testimony, they have concluded there are Bigfoot in Hayward.
That is intense. Can you possibly?
I'll send you the link. Yeah.
Could you possibly just do your best version of a Squatch call for the listeners here, so they have a point of reference, Jay?
Well, he described it. He thought it was a man. It was dark. There were walleye fishing off the pier at night. And it was a still night too, so you could hear everything.
Those are squatchy conditions.
So he's like, exactly. Yeah. He thought this thing's got to be at the end of the pier, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't. No.
Then
it sounded more like a monkey, he said.
Ah, kind of racist, yep.
So Todd, the host, concluded that it was quite possibly and probably for sure. I think he called it a nest of Bigfoot.
Oh,
like a whole family.
That's dangerous.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It's a good, it's an interesting show. It's on YouTube. It's called Sasquatch Theory.
That's great. It's like, if you want to know the effects of taking PCB.
Well, that's the thing. They never saw one. No one's ever seen one, but they definitely heard it. So it's confirmed.
The advent of trail cams and cell phones have slowed that. Like if I were to make a graph or a chart, mm-hmm. you know, it's mm-hmm. real weird. I'm just throwing that out there. Well, that is an important. I'm glad, Jay. Yeah. You've always been a man of science, and that just proves
right.
it. You were right. doing
exactly.
some serious
research.
I grant thee an honorary doctorate from Muskie 360 University to JSE for Squatch Theory. That's amazing.
Okay.
That's congratulations, Doctor.
Thanks.
Go forth and proliferate. Anyway, what we got going on here, I'm going to tell you of things, the comings and the goings at the Muskie Shop, of things that I thought were cool, and then most people were like, whatever. That frickin' the Grim Reaper Keeper, which is like a trapper keeper for spinner baits.
Yeah, you like that thing.
God
yeah,
bless
for sure.
them. That is magnifique. I hope the plastic is nice and strong. That is a great way. The way I store my spinner baits, Jay, what's the Plano model with no dividers in the middle of it?
3730.
Thank you, autism. Anyway,
Pile them in there.
I take a Plano 3730 and throw about 7 billion figure eight spinner baits in there. And then it's like you're like shaking them out. Because, again, it's chaos theory, Jay. Right. Mm-hmm. The way I get baits out, it's pure chaos theory. I see the bait I want. And if you shake it long enough, right, it's like monkeys at typewriters. Inevitably, they will write Shakespeare. Right. If you just shake the bait long enough, it'll come unhooked. So that's how I've been rolling with spinner baits for a long time. But the Reaper Keeper, I imagine Trapper Keeper is a trademark, but you know, Grim Reaper, Trapper Keeper. However, the Grim Reaper, Reaper Keeper, that's cool. Good on the Grim Reaper. I'm glad not only is he taking your grandparents to hell, he's making great bait storage options. What else do we have here? Sucker Prop, the Herbeck Special from Savage. Jay, you got a short out on that guy. I know we talked about it. I dig it. It's cool. It's proppy. It's suckerish. What do you think of it on the water, Jay?
It's good. Yep. Got some good shots
Thank
of it from underneath, too. So, yep.
That was great.
Good solid bait, you know. Thing is, it's heavy enough. It does not roll at any speed. And that's important. That's a very important factor with, you know, tailbait fisherman. So got a good consistent plop, good sturdy manual. You know what I mean? Like it's not going to, you're not going to catch a fish on it. The thing's not going to come out of tune.
No.
Like the old school one. So
I don't remember what I say on here half the time, but I think I said something along the lines of kind of that new gen, the next phase of topwaters. You know, you went from the classics to the, you know, we're miles and light years away from a Gooch's Tallywhacker, which is still a cool bait. It has its place and it deserves a slot in your tackle box. But you look at the Big Mac from Livingston and the Sucker Prop, these are kind of like the next iteration, kind of the refinements, you know what I'm saying?
And they have a loud aggressive plop. It's not subtle. It's the opposite. Yeah.
Right.
And it looks great. So,
well, no, you know, certain baits, you know, you deal with rollover issues, which is going to cost you fish. You can't fish them at high speed, going to cost you fish. So that's the way things go. You know, where if you're, don't be stuck every, you know, Jay, we're just all about the science today. It's one of those things. You look at Moore's Law. I've said it before. Things advance. Things change. But, you know, it's kind of one of these things when you look at the new topwaters. It's like, should I really be running something with MS-DOS or should I get the new MacBook? You know, the performance is different. And I hate to say that. And, I mean, especially, you know, bait goes plop, plop, plop. Fish goes, but. No, I'm digging it with the new topwaters because it's solving problems. It's getting, yes, all the older topwaters, they have their place, like I said. But I like it. I like the new school of topwaters where if you got to do the Minnesota burn on a fish, it's not going to roll over. It's not going to foul up. That stuff like that. I do have to point out, you know, you got the feather duster there on the back of the baby duck one. Which is handy.
Yeah, it's been a popular choice. Yeah,
I know. I saw that. People, Savage Gear has cornered the market on rednecks that they ate ducks.
They're eating ducks right now. Ducks.
That's it. That's it. Boys are on the duck. That is. They have, you know, and more power to them. They had the what was the little Savage Gear 3D duck with its little ploppy feet. Yeah. Right, that was an abomination, in my opinion. Sold a lot of bait, so my opinion doesn't matter. Right, I had the bat. I got a lot of traction out of bat jokes on that one. But they always—I mean, people—they know the market. Let me put it that way: they are not—they don't miss. They are not missing there with the duck baits. You know why did you not? The only question is this: why did we not put a little feather accoutrement on another one? And I think that they would have to be, the way people are buying that feather duster one, you would have to add feathers to the next ones, you know. So
good point.
We'll see that. Other than that, power paddles, bunch of people got into that, guys. That those are finally showed up, and I've already gotten some people. Seems like depth raiders, a lot of like the bunch of people bought these, like, oh my god, I put them on a depth raider and it's really cool.
Did you see that short I did on
I
it?
Did not.
I sent it to Jody. Okay, I think I just only have right now put it on my Instagram page. So put it on the back of a depth raider, straight depth raider, like one of your suggestions last week when we were talking about it, because you know it was blind to me. I'd never seen it yet.
Right.
You know, a week ago. And you're like, you know, try it on this, and this. So the first one, Tom and I got out, okay, we did the depth raider. I slowed it down and check it out. I think it performs exactly like the way you were envisioning it. It's still got the depth raider kick side to side. The depth raider is in an 8-inch deep diving crankbait, right? But it's got this kind of up and down kind of kick in between.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I'm still trying to figure out what to do with these things. And that flat out, I told you, I don't know. You know, stick it on your wife's forehead, see how it works out. It might work. It might not. You know, that's just the cool thing of playing around with it. I've been rocking them on the back of my Titans. That's one of my favorite things, especially like in the figure eight, and you got a little bit more thumpy thump with the rocking back and forth and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is fun. Do a short on those, by the way.
Okay.
That would be cool because that's funky, but. I don't know. Like I said, just it's there for you to play with. Feel free, Jay. Reach out and play with it. Don't be scared.
Mm-hmm.
Just play with it a little bit.
got some more in mind when we get a chance to get out and do some shooting. So yeah, yeah, well, I think that there's a lot of possibilities. I was going to take a big bucktail out there until I realized that most of the big bucktails, like, you know, double nines, double tens, they're shrink tubes. And I'm like, and I don't have anything with me at work. And I'm like, I'm not going to ruin a bait and cut the shrink tube off.
Grab a big booker. They don't shrink.
Double eight maybe.
Booker. It depends. Okay. I'll warn you on this because I played with a ton more bucktails this week. I mean, like a lighter bucktail, you'll get rollover. Kind of what Al Frost said one time, the corn dog effect where the thing just rolls up. But yeah, just play around with it. Another cool bait this was on was the rattle hog, by the way. But I was going to tell you, I want you to play around with this, and we're just talking ideas. That MM26, they've got the shutter shad.
Yeah.
Stick one on that bad boy. Those rip baits, pool baits, stuff like that, which is cool. So anyway,
yeah, that shutter shad looks cool too. I saw it on his phone. He had some footage of it from, you know, from up top looking down on clear water. So thing really kicks. So we'll get that shot too. And yeah, we've been getting so much new stuff in the last crazy. Couple weeks, Steve. I can't even keep up.
I thought we were done. No.
Hits keep on coming, baby.
It is never ending.
The Meps too. Giant Killers are 15% off now.
There you go.
Meps Giant Killer.
What are you gonna do? What
buy
else
a bunch.
Is your, goodness gracious. They keep overloading us with stuff. Back to that Sasquatch thing. Anyway, I'm teasing. What else do we got going on here? Oh yeah, the bash. Be there, be square. We've gotten a bunch of messages this week about the bash. There's going to be a tent, and there's going to be people, and there's going to be baits. I believe we're going to just focus on the vendors as always, but I believe Herbie's going to do a short presentation about his Sasquatch adventures.
Hope so.
And then we'll all
get a lot of free raffles too. Giving away
sunset,
a lot of stuff.
Yeah, at sunset we'll hand out the night vision goggles and the 38s. And then if you see something move, just shoot.
You're thinking Sasquatch have moved into the Monaco region now? Is that what you're saying?
If everyone bands together, we can bring it into this scourge.
Okay.
There'll be innocent bystanders Jay, it's part of it. It's called a cleansing. Mm-hmm. So if we just start at that end of town and everybody walks hands in hands, you know, just make a human chain and night vision goggles. It'd work. Anyway, goodness gracious, we need to get to the questions. First up is Brock. Hi, Steve. The lake I fish typically, because it is close. Okay, we're working on this, guys. There is spell check. Hold on, sorry. The lake I typically fish is packed with grassy weeds and gets cut daily. The weeds grow in over 12 feet in depth to the surface. It's packed. How would you go about fishing a lake that is severely choked with weeds? Okay, so weed mitigation, right? How are we going to deal with super, super weedy conditions? You're never going to come 100% clean through the most insane density, right? Now, earlier in the season, I don't know what lake this is, but weeds are going to grow quicker in the shallows, the warmer zones, and you'll have edges. So in the early part of the area or early part of the year, focus on the outside edge where you can get into baits that perform exceptionally well in weeds. Titan, Jay, you've seen it. Remember we're in the river that one time, you just throw it in a muck pile and we still get it through, right? So Titan is designed to run head forward in that. The meat grinder from Figure Eight, those are both like super weedless kind of things. Violent Strike, the dude that does Violent Strike, he always has a trick or two where it's like, okay, here's super weedless Weed McGee or whatever he's doing. Do you know?
He has several models that have big single hooks. Yeah.
And that's where I'm going. So you have baits that are good at deflecting weeds the way that they run, right? Titan Meat Grinder. Then you have weedless baits where baits are designed for that. Now, weedless often means hookless, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way. It's just a thing that gets bantered around where there was a bait back in the day. What is its freaking name? It was from Odyssey, Jay, and it was
the pig.
Not the pig. It's a weedless topwater bait. And it's, what is that?
Sloppy pig.
Sloppy pig. There she blows. So, you know, you had the sloppy pig.
Right. Yeah.
It's hard to. Why are you guys not serious all the time on the podcast? When you have to talk about things such as, like, Jay, we'll get real serious. Today we discuss the merits of the sloppy pig here on NPR, right?
Exactly.
Play a little jazz. Talks. Yeah, nice talks often. Jay, what do you think of the sloppy pig when we're hunting for Northwoods hogs? You know, but anyway.
Yeah.
All these great things. And next is the lesbian jazz trio from Zimbabwe. You come out on that. Sorry, that's my NPR.
Segue right into that.
That's my NPR impression. Nonetheless, you had like this sloppy pig bait where back in the day it was like, oh, you can't catch a fish on it. You can't catch a fish on it. And it's basically like this weird half a coconut with a single hook and some it's, I'm not making fun of it. It was weedless, but it just had a big top, like 10-aught single hook. It's very difficult to hook a muskie on topwater if you think about how they're hitting it that way. And so a lot of that came where guys would avoid, I think, because of that bait and because of that presentation style, people got real spooked out on weedless. But with that being said, there's some other tricks. You can take, say, a Top Raider or a Big Mac, or you can take this new Savage gear. I'm sure it'd hold up to it. Take off that rear treble hook. Take off your bottom treble hook and put a single hook where it's pointed up. I've seen it done effectively. You can do that if you're fishing in the nastiest of nasty stuff. You're not going to contend with mats, right? Like grass mats. But you can pick pockets and holes and come over like really thick stuff by augmenting a topwater there. Again, focusing on these baits, the violent strike stuff where he's weedless. And I think, Jay, when I think about this, like maybe I'm conceptualizing it wrong for this guy's lake, but you know, you look like a Lac Vieux d'Azur where that lake is weedy as weedy gets. And as you get in the summer, there's barely any open water. It's just all weeds, right? There's fish there. Mm-hmm. You've just got to fight through the crap, right? And again, there's a lot of traction you can get by single hooking. Save yourself a lot of trouble in extremely weedy conditions, however, with your leader setup. So you look at, say, the meat grinder or, you know, the tailgater, the stuff I'm doing with Figure Eight, where we've done the heat shrink over certain components. I've always found that it's valuable in superbly weedy conditions to get rid of the ball bearing swivel, get rid of the snap, right? They gather weeds. Clean up your signal chain as best as you can, right? So what we want to do is remove things. There's a knot. I haven't done it in eons, and I can't recall. Is it a blood knot where it's a line to line, Jay? I think.
Yeah, it's a blood knot.
Yeah, and there's some really clean knots, you know, you can use where you can actually tie fluorocarbon and braid together or other materials, right? I've done that in the past. What I prefer to do is just take my fluorocarbon leader, remove the swivel, remove the ball bearing, and then just tie directly to the fluoro and then, you know, do a split ring connection and remove anything that's going to streamline your setup, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anything,
yeah, for sure.
Streamline that because you are one weed getting caught on the ball bearing of your swivel away from missing a big fish, right? Or you're one weed from getting caught on the stay lock snap that now it's messed up your bait's action and that screwed your entire day. So that's something to look at. As far as tackling these things, if you can't get into the shallow stuff, always focus on the edge. And a commentary I have about the density of weeds in general. There has to be openings under weeds for muskies to operate, right? If they're actively feeding, they cannot be in a mat, right? So if you look at this vegetation, it grows up and it mats at the top or it thickens up. They're operating in the voids underneath, right?
Yeah, they need room to turn, for sure.
Right, and they need operational room. Most of the time, when they're active, muskies definitely bury in stuff in bad conditions, but when they're, like, actively feeding, they're on the edge. They're working in a void or an area where they can come out, grab what they want to grab, and be done, right? So, you know, at times one might have to work extreme density, but, you know, for the most part, focus on the edges. That's going to be it. Go weedless on everything you can. The other little trick I have for exceptionally weedy conditions, you know, I love my braid musky shop where a lot of people fish the next level braid. It's superbly smooth, right? It's a really smooth braided line. The only thing I would say that you can do, and it's severe weeds that'll help you to cut stuff up, is go with a super coarse line, right? So you're going to lose casting distance, and you're probably going to, your thumb's going to feel it, but there's very, very coarse lines, Jay. Can you think of one off the top? I think Beast Braid is coarse. You'll have a coarse braid where it kind of helps cut through weeds a bit, right?
Yeah, something like Master Braid has a little bit more
texture.
Texture versus like a coating. Right. You know, some of the power pros are well, super slick. There you go. It's just that.
And with that, you know, everybody's done it. Your throat, you make your cast, your presentation's coming in, and between you and your figure eight, there's a weed and you can't get around it, right? It's just a surface weed. You know, the braided line, it's not like you're wielding a samurai sword here, but on occasion you can kind of jerk through it, and the braided line that's coarse will kind of rip through things if it's just a bit, right? But we're in extreme examples here, but if that's what you're fishing and you're fishing nasty McNastysburg with nothing but heavy weeds, you know, that coarse braided line can help you out there, you know? Or you just hire Jay and he comes out and he just takes your baits down there for you. No casting necessary. Hold on. Let me get to the next one here, Jay. I'm digging through the email. I didn't get them ready ahead of time because I'm a moron. What do you do?
What do we got here?
Caleb, what kind of advice would you give to someone acting as a pseudo guide for a week? We're heading up to Little Arb, and it's mid-June, but I've been acting as the family guide for 4 years with little to no success. Love the podcast. Thanks for advice. That happens a lot, and that's a great question. I actually love that one, right? You are the man in charge of the family fishing trip. I think, Jay, you've done it. I've definitely done it. Guy's going to do it. It falls upon your shoulders to be the guide of the family fishing trip. Okay. That is tougher than being the guide for hire. All right. Let's put it that way. You know, first and foremost, from a family dynamic standpoint, there's a definitive line in between I am for hire and I have to share a home with you. Right. So that's different. That's why me and Jody Michael can't fish together. there can only be one captain. But when everybody's, and it's a great thing. It's the same thing if you're taking your buddy, right? You're taking your buddy, you know, if you got a friend that's interested in musky fishing and you're trying to get him fired up and started, you're taking the girlfriend, you're taking your boyfriend, you're taking both your girlfriend and your boyfriend. It's 2025, Jay. Everything's at play here. And, you know, whomever. You're playing guide, right? If you're exposing somebody to a new style of fishing or trying to help them catch fish, you're definitely a pseudo guide. You're playing guide. First and foremost, the trick to that is assessing what people are actually capable of. Okay? And this is an odd one. And I'll hearken back to a previous conversation with Steve Herbeck, where he just said it, and Herbie's never afraid to say the quiet part out loud, Jay, where we're talking about just General Muskie stuff, and he said, well, some people just won't get it, and they won't. Right? Which okay. is, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And that's guiding, which is, I can sit there at times and show someone, and this is kind of like how I roll. When I'm on the boat, I don't get very excited until we've got a fish on. And then I go from 0 to 1,000. The rest of the time, you're stuck in a tree? Cool. Not the first time, won't be the last. You got a bird's nest? Hey, I get them too. I'm lying. I don't. But I'm trying to make people feel better. I'm teasing. I still get them. But you know, you're trying to keep that environment. But I'm also assessing with someone, okay, hey, we've worked on this glide bait presentation now, and I've made 7 or 8 nice commentaries. Let it hang. Hey, give it more snap. I'm conveying the information, and I'm breaking down the information even further to hands-on for a one-for-one example, and it still doesn't resonate, right? As a guide, and you're the pseudo-family guide, when you hit that and you've politely and nicely explained in a clear and concise format of what to do, and it's still not happening, that's called an impasse, right? And you've got 2 options, right? Which is bearing down and annoying someone or making a change. So first and foremost, what I'm getting at is make sure that whomever you're showing presentations to or telling them what to do, that you give them a very clear, concise set of directions. If they don't seem to get it quickly, move them to something neophyte. Move them to something that they can get, right?
Sure.
It is a grinder monkey in his little vest, Jay, that would, you know, turn the handles of the calliope there. He can work a spinnerbait, right? Did I tell you about the time I tried to get Dawn from Figure Eight to buy me a monkey? I almost had him talked into it, Jay. Like, literally, imagine. I'm setting the scene. It's very cinematic camera work, right? And you pan over, and it's just a monkey wearing a fez, and he's turning the handle of a Trenx 400, and he's got one on because we made the casts for him and just made the monkey turn the handle with a spinnerbait till he caught one. Perfect. What do you think? Is that's
good.
That's yes.
That's illustration right there.
That is amazing. Anyway, but have your backup plan when you're the family pseudo guide. Have your backup plan of simplicity, right? Yeah. Play to the strengths is what I'm getting at. Don't put stupid Uncle Eddie. Don't put him on a Suic and say, hey, you probably need to tune this. Make sure you tune it, and we need it to be suspending. Like, you look at somebody that's like not a hardcore fisherman or is not living, eating it, breathing it every day, listening to musky fishing podcasts, things of that nature, they're not gonna get it, right? So make sure that you're playing to the strengths of who you're guiding, right? That's it. So that's your job, first and foremost, to formulate a game plan that plays to their strengths. If Grandma Margaret can't keep bucktails open, put her on a spinnerbait. So, you know, spinnerbaits are your friend. Topwaters are your friend, right? You put them on a Big Mac, throw it out, turn the handle. You know, just keep turning the handle. Don't stop. That's where you go from there. Now, as far as that, if you're the pseudo guide, and you're the dude that's writing into Muskie Podcast, it's your job to pattern, maintain boat control, and figure out what's going on to play it to their strengths, right? So you need to just kind of be rotating through the tackle box there and get dialed in. If it's June and he said it's an arb, you know, you can get away with your blade baits, your bucktails, your spinner baits, obviously rubber, glider, all that stuff. And just work through it and figure out where they're at while you play to the strengths of other people. You know, have somebody on. I mean, working a 5-inch shallow rater twitched is not rocket surgery, right? but keep it simple. That's the thing. That's your number one job, is play to the strengths of the people in the boat. What are they capable of doing? Everything else comes together, because you take out people that are fishing muskies once a year and you say, hey, guys, these things are on, they're on bulldogs. Make sure you give it an extended pause. And they're sitting there going, okay, do I turn the handle? Right. So that's it, is assess skill level, play to skill level, pattern. And then, right, and this is just a tip for all the above, whether you're playing suit or guide or not, is once we've assessed their skill level, right, we got them throwing, and your next job is to move one or get one in the boat and figure out what they're doing, and then move your boat accordingly, right? Let's say these people can't cast, but the muskies are on the outside edge. You're now positioning the boat where the lesser of the family is at least in the hunt, right? So let's say your uncle can only cast 45 feet. Well, guess where at what? You have to compensate, right? So you're always compensating for skill level, and you're always compensating for that. And the last thing I'll say, without just beating it to death, everyone fishes too fast, right? Everyone has this thing. So watch how everyone's retrieving.
Yes, absolutely.
And for years, and I still do it, people call it, you know, half spool Steve. There's not a lot of line on your reel. Buddy, I have my own brand of line. I can have as much braided line as I want, right? I could knit you a sweater out of if I chose to do so, right? I don't keep the spools full, because even at 6.3:1 or 5.3, I want things slowed down, because everybody is that freaking, you know, calliope grinder monkey. They got one trick. What is it, Jay? Turning the handle, right? They just get on that thing. Hey, slow down. And you turn around and they're grinding coffee. They're just turning away, dreaming of the big bite. And do yourself a favor. If you have low skill anglers, don't give them, in my opinion, a low skill angler with a 6.3:1 reel that's completely spooled up, their baits will be running 4 inches under the surface all day long, regardless of what bait it is, right? Because the muskie is going to jump out of the lake, and it's going to come jumping in front of the full moon while the wolves howl, just like the t-shirt I bought off of Amazon. Right, their concept of what muskies do, their concept of what is going to happen, is so skewed from the reality of the matter that, of course, muskies hit everything fast. Of course, I've got to move this bait extremely fast because they're hot all day long, which goes back to the whole thing, all the stuff we talk about. But with a low skill angler, you're not even competing with competence. You're competing with conceptualization. Right, they're in their mind, this is a freshwater shark. I've heard that a minute. They're like a freshwater shark. Well, no, they're not. But you know, so everything's fast, everything's vicious, everything's this. You know, energy drink commercial of fishing.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
Turn it up, musky.
Slow
thunder.
It down.
Yeah, slow it down.
And you're probably not going to teach that person to perform even a decent figure eight. So if you could just get them to at least make like an L turn, you know,
ovals
at the boat, something, uh-huh, you know, and get them out there at prime time too.
Yeah, that's,
you know, if they just want to go out for a couple hours, let's not go out at 2. Let's play beach bingo right now. Let's go out after dinner for a couple hours. Mm-hmm. You just upped your odds right there too. So. You want them to at least have an encounter with a fish, have some kind of good experience. So up your odds.
That's another, man. I was down a different rabbit hole, but you're right. When you're playing pseudo guide, make, you know, that's another thing. Again, this is just guiding, and it's just, maybe you think it's interesting, maybe not. Not only, and this is not family, this is everything. This is just guiding for fishing. I don't feel as though that I am, you know, it's not me versus the muskies that day. It's me managing my client's abilities versus the muskies that day. Right? And abilities, stamina is one of them. Right? So physical stamina is in one. And then on the other hand of that, also their freaking mental acumen. That's a whole other story. The amount of, you know, well, I wish I'd just see one. Oh. Right? And you know, I can kind of tell you who somebody is in the first few hours of a guide trip. It's on a bad day, you know, on a day that it's not happening off the rip. And that's just a thing. So you're managing physical, and you're also managing their emotional state, right? You really are. I mean, take somebody fishing, one of your buddies, and they let their mask down. Man, this sucks. You know, you've heard it. Everybody's taking that guy. You know what I'm saying?
Fatigue sets in quickly. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And for someone that's not really into it and hasn't experienced before. Right. Yeah.
And so mental, physical, manage that. It's funny too, Jay. I'll tell you, man. This is just social commentary at this juncture, which is the digital age, the TikTok, the social media age, the immediacy of I want it and I want it now is an interesting dynamic to watch to play out on a musky boat. When I'm taking, like, a lot of times, you know, somebody in their 40s or 50s, they bring their kid, and it's like ADD theater, dude.
Shortcuts.
Oh, short.
They've lived shortcuts.
That's
their life.
Which is
all their life.
That is so, you know, exposed out there. We're watching, the change in somebody's demeanor. I mean, I've always kind of been a student of human beings, and that's interesting to watch, where you just go, you're broke already, aren't you? You know, and it's not mad. It's just, we all wish we'd see one. We've been out here 18 minutes, sir. You know, I mean, you know, because as a guide, this is another thing. As a guide, you want nothing more to get it over with fast. Right. And I think I speak for all guides. I think there's not a musky guide on planet Earth that does not want to pull out of the boat dock and have you on a fish within the first half hour to get it over with. Right. Mm-hmm. You'd be crazy not to. Like, okay, monkey's off my back. Right. We're done with that. We're good. And that's the funny thing. But the clients, and he's talking about guy in the family, you know, everybody's fired up. They got that energy, you know, they want it too. And that's where the difference is. It's funny. Moving on, but that's just a different take. Dylan, love the pod. I look for it every Monday. Not sure if you've addressed this before. I know you guys are really busy. If you consider bringing a video recording aspect to the pod, we did one time and it was awkward as hell. I'd love to watch you monk. CJ, it's all cyclical. The time is a flat circle. This guy says he calls us monkeys. Like watching you muskies. I'd like to watch you monkeys talk musky. Think it's interesting. Yeah, it's a time thing. It's also a cringe thing. Me and Jay are kind of douchey, and it'd get real cringy. There's that. We're old and ugly. We got that going. What else doesn't make it work on video, Jay?
What else doesn't make it work? Who cares?
Who cares?
One thing. If you want to see us, come to the bash.
Come to the bash. Be disappointed. There's nothing more disappointing than meeting a podcaster in person, folks. I'm pretty steady Eddie. But we did have a discussion this week. And a lot of people don't realize I've had some people ask, and I know Jay's always banging out the shorts. Last year, when we had primarily would have been doing like the video stuff, Jay and I both got like some disease for about a week and we're sick. So we'll definitely have more video stuff out, more instructional stuff. But what we ought to do, Jay, I think for that point, I like his idea. You know, maybe you and I sit down somewhere cozy and kind of talk about some of the, you know what? I got it. I got it. And in real time here. Send them now. Jay hates it already. Send us your best questions and we'll do like one, right? We'll do just like one kind of video where we talk, maybe me and Jay talk about some of the most important things we've covered on the show over all these years and everything, and plug that. But if you got questions for a video one, send them now and we'll see. If your questions suck, we probably won't do it. But if you have decent questions or something that are more visually oriented or something like that, we'll see what we can work up when we're kicking around in the North Woods there. Fred! See, you don't want to watch a guy just do what I just did. See, it was a knee jerk, Jay. I'm sure my face looked weird. Anyway.
Right. And then I'd be forced to run it back in slow motion, like repeatedly.
All right.
Really turn people off.
You know, much less I've never worn clothes while doing
you just don't want to see us on
just
film.
Not in
you
the,
don't.
I can't. No. I can't get in the podcast zone with clothing on.
Yeah, of course. I mean, okay. Seen it once, I've seen it 100 times.
How about Diet Coke up my nose? Anyway, Fred. Been listening to the podcast for a while, and I remember you saying something about fishing in Denmark. Turns out I'm going to Denmark because of work for about 3 weeks. Can you recommend lakes, streams to fish, names? You got some planer boards. We're going to try them out. Cool. So, depends on where you're at. The fun thing about Denmark, it's not that big, right? So, off the top, number one, check your regs, first and foremost. There are tons, and when I say tons of water, you know, all this was built up, Jay, right? It's just all water. You have tons of canals, and I'm talking just everywhere, right? So what I would recommend for funsies, especially if you're working, right, and you're, you know, maybe you plan a weekend trip or you're going to go do a big water thing, I don't think you're flying your boat over, right? And it's going to be one of those things where you can kind of just walk around, right, and fish, whether it be canals, whether it be
You mean bank fish, the canals,
yeah,
and stuff?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That's what I'm getting at, is backpack it, man. I mean, freaking, you know, Denmark, Netherlands, all this stuff. There's so much water, and I mean, there's just canals everywhere. Obviously, make sure you're check your regs, you know, use your Google Translate. But man, I've been like in the Netherlands and seen guys catching, you know, let me back it up even by saying this. Tim's brother, Ronald, right? Behind his house, there's just a canal. And I mean, they'll catch 3-foot northerns out of that thing behind the house. Right? There's water everywhere. You'll see a lot of tourists and a lot of locals fishing the canals for perch and for zander and for pike. So there's tons of opportunity there. Not a tremendous amount of fishing pressure. So if it were me, I would get my hands on like a backpack grade pole, you know, spool it up with some braid. Obviously, you're not going to be able to take like a musky grade rod. You ain't flying a 9-footer even broken down. But Jay, can you think of it like an 8-foot or a 9-foot 2-piece? I don't know if there's one that breaks down to like small enough for a small rod tube, but there's tons of like travel rods you can find that are kind of like heavy duty bass rods. Get one of those, get you a Plano flat. Those fish over there, spinnerbaits, Viper 6 from Livingston, Phantoms, small twitch baits. And then I would definitely take bass grade tackle, right? A lot of the canal fish and a lot of that stuff, people are just killing them on, you know, bass size stuff. That jerk
little swim baits and stuff.
No, like cranks and then the jerks. I mean, little swim baits like a Sassy Shad or the Storm Wild Eye Shad, you're going to catch little perch or big perch and small pike. Just devastating over there. It's that jerk. It's a bass bait from Livingston, but they crush and they sell like crazy over there. It's the Jerkmaster 121, right? And you can pick them up Fleet Farm places like that, like that carry like the Livingston bass line, right? Do we have any of the bass stuff left? You might be able to see them on Musky Shop, but this is like a pure bass bait, and it's like a suspending little jerk twitch bait. That is just devastating. but think bass tackle, think mobile, you know, rent a bike and bike up and down the canals, you know, or get in the canal and pull a bike out. There's hundreds of them down there.
Take your pick.
I know it sounds stupid, but when you look at it, it's really fun. I mean, you just jump up, you got a backpack and a rented bike, and you can freaking, you know, just kind of hit these canals and hit, you know, what looks like big streams everywhere, and there's fish everywhere. That would be the trick. That would be a fun adventure, you know.
Nice.
I have a separate list of things to do in Denmark.
Outside of fishing?
Outside of fishing. Musky Matty. Hey, fellas. First time caller, long time listener. Meow. Give him the meow, Jay.
Meow.
That didn't have much spirit. Anyway, I know LiveScope's been a hot topic with the podcast. Meow. Again, I'd like to give you my take. Oh. Here it comes. We didn't ask for it, but here it is. I think the technology is amazing, but I grew up fishing on a 14-foot boat, 5 1/2-horse Johnson, fishing walleyes, crappy Eagle Graph nonetheless. I was introduced to musky fishing when I was 19 years old in northern Minnesota, which I came addicted to. Long story short, had to go to college, find a job, which I did years down the road. I'm now 35 and finally able to grab myself a nice boat, but I don't have enough cash to buy this higher-end electronics. Now I'm watching guys on body of water shoot muskies with their brand new stuff, and have never fished on the lake I used to know well. Now I go out and I'm pretty much outnumbered just because I don't have daddy's money. These guys only care about a pic on social media. I agree in some capacity. Haven't used social media in years. Good on you, because that's how lives are ruined. Now I'm asking, how is it fair? I work a 40 to 60 hour a week job, and these young kids hop in a big rig that they didn't buy and watch them catch skis and drop them on the deck of their boat, laugh about it, go catch an owner right in front of me while I'm fishing in a boat that I worked hard for, and put them in the bag. The lake is full of young scopers. I'm totally against it. Change my mind. I care about the fish, not the pick. Okay, couple things here. There's some good stuff, and there's some stuff I would at least just say, hey, and life is about nice conversations. There's a giant assumption about others' socioeconomic status and other people's equipment, right? So, I mean, if you know those guys and you know for sure that's, you know, somebody's son and they told you, hey, dad bought me this boat, but I know freaking 20-year-old multimillionaires. I know, you know, and it's not daddy's money. And I know guys that have written hit songs when they're 17 and they're worth $80 million, right? So there's a giant assumption there. So that's something I would look at, which is, goes to this. And guys, I'm just going to say it, and this is kind of how I try to lead my life to the best of my ability in the social media weird age that we're in, right? It's a Mark Twain quote. Comparison is the theft of joy. That's why I hate social media. That's why I find a lot of our culture disgusting, right? And I think it cuts to the heart of the matter, which is comparison of the theft of joy. If I compare what I have to what Jay has, I'm killing him. Jay's got to be, you're miserable, right? I'm teasing. Sorry. But you can't compare, right? You can't compare that. So you asked me to dissect it, I'm dissecting it. All right. If they dropped the fish and they laughed about it, okay, was that nefarious? Were they disrespecting it, or were they laughing because, oh, crap, we messed up and dropped a fish? I, too, dropped fish. Admittedly so. I am an unabashed musky killer. I've done it. I've talked about it before. I've dropped them and killed them. I'll be the first one to walk up to the gallows, right? Herbie said they could gold plate his tire iron for the Hall of Fame. He's killed him. It happens, right? So
it happens.
Unpacking that, I go, okay. So obviously, what I respect in that, you're definitely a hardworking guy and good on you, right? But how are those guys directly affecting you? It sounds like a comparison. It doesn't sound like a direct impact.
Well, he's suggesting, I think, that they're catching all the fish because of the technology, and they didn't deserve it as much as he does because he's worked hard for it and he's not using it, and they have an advantage over them all of a sudden.
That's life. That's life. And I hate to say that, but you asked, and I appreciate it. You said, what changed my mind, or what's my opinion, or something of that nature. That's life, man.
Yeah, I understand his feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, and I'm just trying
to... I get it, too, but
I've been there. I have a friend that frickin'... Here I was driving a 1991, okay, Honda frickin'... The first Civic, Jay. The biggest piece of shit car you've ever seen. The AC didn't work. And a friend that freaking had a big enough hit, they had a Lamborghini. Was I jealous? Yes. Right? Did I feel like shit? Yes. Did I sulk and whine and get mad about it? Maybe a little bit. And then I learned from it. Right? And it's like, okay. So that's an overarching thing. But I'm looking at that and I'm going... And when I see the live scope, back to the fishing aspect of the thing, is that comparison is theft of joy. Yes, people post fish on social media because they need the dopamine hit and they need the attention. You nailed that, right? That's a whole other dynamic. And the reason I'm kind of going, you brought up kind of the thought process and this and that and the other. That's why I'm diverging from fishing on some aspect. But My thing is this. I'm trying. You said convince me you're wrong. I'm not convincing that you're wrong. I'm convincing you that there's nothing you can do about it. And there, in the sense of, other than try to positively influence people to respect a resource. And, you know, it's like the Herbeck thing. A lot of people talked about like how Herbeck and Cal Ritchie were handling that thing. You know, was it perfect? No. Is anything perfect? No. Was their heart in the right place? Yes. Is there duplicity in things that both sides say in that argument? Yes. It would, if I, and it's one of these things, it's like, if I could control everything that they said or did, would I say it differently or do it differently? Yes. But that's not my place. You know, when we talk with Dr. Bob on that topic, okay, is this fact or is it feelings, right? And I find that it's a slippery slope when we jump to the conclusion that this is impactful. And as an angler, we can all agree there's an impact of this, but we're trying to navigate what that is, right? And so when I've talked to guys on this same subject about the power scoping thing, yeah, man. It is what it is. There's what you can do is be positive about it. What you can do is don't, if, and for this gentleman, for his example, I think his heart's in the right place. I think his ass is chapped. Right. Because he says he works 40, 60 hours a week and he doesn't have daddy's money to buy the stuff. And there's this, I get it, but there's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing. You can scream at the sky, but until it's regulated or until we can prove that there is a definitive negative impact, that's it.
Well, I mentioned before shortcuts too, right? You know, and that's the thing with really young anglers too, is they're going to find a way to use shortcuts to their advantage to shorten the learning curve. FFS kind of falls into that.
Yeah, I mean it does. I mean, that's
going to boost your success rate. It probably will once you learn how to operate it.
That's the
thing. And that can be frustrating to somebody not using it. It's just like, look at these young punks coming out here, you know, banging four fish a day. You know, I'm out here doing a more traditional method, and I didn't even see a fish today. Yeah, that. Frustration.
But that's why
it's musky fishing.
That's why I said comparison is theft of joy. Who cares? And I'm not talking about this guy. If getting on social media and seeing somebody posted a fish, and I know guys like this, I'm going to call it out, right? If you get on social media and you see somebody you know and they caught a fish and it gives you the, it upsets you or it elicits some kind of negative reaction, you have a problem. There's something innately not right. I'm not a psychologist. Maybe I could have one on. But that thing of if you see somebody else is successful and it upsets you, that's an issue. Right?
That it is an issue. It is. I believe that. Yeah.
And that's a root evil in just the overarching sport of muskie.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. And I mean, to this guy.
But, I mean, generally, you're kind of taking away joy from somebody, too, because, you know, bottom line, most people that are constantly, you know, posting fish, they're really happy about that. They're really proud of it, you know. Whether you should be, you know, doing the comparison thing nonstop is another matter. But, you know.
Well, and I mean that in the sense of just when you can't stack yourself up against the king in Dubai and say, I'm rich. Right? Why compare?
Yeah.
Nobody's keeping score. But like this dude said, I appreciate it, man. He doesn't want to get on the social shit, and it's not about him posting the pictures and all that. Cool. To them it is, and what's wrong with that? Why are you allowed to control what makes somebody else happy? If somebody can explain that argument, because the argument is right now, what you do, what makes you happy and you enjoy is hurting my potential joy. And if I broke this argument down, that's about where I go with it on the whole forward-facing sonar thing. Now, until we have empirical data, which is you cannot argue empirical data. If we have empirical data that says this is detrimental to the health of this species and this body of water, the argument right now is I don't like what you're doing that makes you happy. Stop doing it. Because I can't do it or I won't do it. And I'm not, Maddie, I appreciate your question. You opened it up for the conversation. I respect that. But that summarizes it. Well, he doesn't have daddy's money to do it. And it pisses him off because he works 40, 60 hours a week. And that's fine. And I respect that. And it's cool you said that. But that is, it doesn't entitle someone. If I like covering myself in peanut butter, right? And rolling around my living room floor while my wife dances. Whose freaking business is it?
Certainly not mine.
Yep. Well, you asked me to live stream it the last time, but nonetheless.
Exactly. That's true.
But nonetheless, you get what I'm saying, yeah. Right? If Jay wants to lock hitchhikers in his basement for years, but what you do, this is overarching. I'm sorry. There's subtext here, isn't there, folks? Those for listening at home, it's kind of, but to stay in the fight here. That's the.
Well, it's kind of the root of FFS, you know, with certain people, the way of looking at it, you know. And no, it's just like
I will argue.
They're showing off. They're boasting. You know, oh, those aren't real. Wasn't that big? You know, it's just a picture of a fish.
Right. When and that's the
and they're putting it on there because
it gives them joy.
Give them joy.
And who are you to say they can't do that? Because if you come to me and say I can't do something that is legal, that is not hurting anything that we're aware of, and I can, again, yeah. If you can't tell, yeah. I have my sneaking suspicions about the impact of forward facing sonar and sharpshooting. I've made that abundantly clear, right? But regulations, laws, public scrutiny, the way you treat other people shouldn't be based on your freaking feelings. Should be rooted in some semblance of truth. Right? So I'll pick on him because he would have the same argument. So Dr. Bob goes out and Dr. Bob blasts a fish in 35 feet of water and he catches it and he releases it and he did it on forward facing sonar and he tells the world about it. Is he a piece of shit because he did it? Should it anger me? Should I be up in arms? No, it's none of my business. He did something that he enjoyed. I didn't like how he did it, and I don't like that he enjoyed it, right? Which goes back to, if I want to freaking, again, overarching everybody, you know, everybody trying to control, well, you shouldn't be able to marry this person, or you shouldn't be able to do, but I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole because it's Muskie podcast, but there's a certain line we're starting to walk here of, you know, you don't do this because I don't like that you're doing it. That's a slippery slope, right? And it's just fishing, and it's just musky fishing. But when you go down that line, I told people, and I've told people in private, when we go down this line, if it keeps getting pushed with forward-facing sonar, it's going to be World War III between the Zoomers and the Boomers, right? Because the kids don't give a rat's ass what you think, right? And Jay's saying that. Like, the kids that are live scoping, they're doing it because they're enjoying it. They're not going out there to rape and pillage and kill all your fish. So that's that weird fine point, I think. Whatever. But Maddie, I appreciate that email. That's a tough one. You know, your lake's full of scopers right now. I'm sorry. That sucks. It is what it is. And it just is what it is. You know, you worked hard for what you had, and I appreciate that. Ricky, I fish Minnesota. I'm just curious when night fishing becomes a good idea. Is there a certain time of year for certain things, or what to look out for, waiting till water temps hits a certain area? What's good out of the gate? So, talk to the old Bob Areno, speaking of him. Talk to Dr. Bob just yesterday. And he had it's a family member, son or somebody of that nature, had an incidental catch bass fishing, Jay, right? It happens. Mm-hmm. That happens all the time. You know, you're fishing for whatever the heck you're fishing. I don't know if it was bass. I don't know what the deal was, but he was fishing off like a dock. He wasn't, and it's like, okay, caught a fish, and their assumption was it was spawned out. And then there's been other reports of suspended fish and all this different stuff. So things are happening there in that Minnesota zone. But like Bob had mentioned when we discussed the opener with him, that they felt pretty confident these fish were going to be flying around and doing musky stuff on opener, right? Which it sounds like it. Which means from out of the gate, I think you have a potential for a night bite right out of the gate. So if they're really recouped and they're onto, you know, your standard musky size stuff, and they're onto real musky size baits, night fishing, I think, is a definite thing that you can do. Something that's overlooked is, especially when you have a temperature disparagement between open water and the shallows, you know, obviously your shallows, your littoral zone are going to be warmer than your open water this time of year. Those fish will slide up in those shallows at night. So you definitely have an opportunity. What am I looking for? What do you want to do? I mean, it's the classic tropes of night fishing, which is slow down, cover water. I'm not afraid of top water, like decent size, like a Big Mac, or what's the big Lake X? Not, I wouldn't go as big as like the Cannonball Jr., but like your Fat B, your Big Mac, that size of a topwater, or stepping it down to that Savage, or like a Top Raider, somewhere in that neighborhood, but slow. You want a topwater that's like blah, 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 right? You want to slow that tempo down.
Mm-hmm.
One thing with blades, And you know, Minnesota is the home of the power fishing, Jay. You got to make the longest catch and got to retrieve real fast, right? That's the common thread. You're going to want to slow things down, but you're also going to look at baits that have lift, like in your bucktails and things of that nature, where your double eights, Meps Flashaboo, that's a light bucktail. I think we still have some of like your Boilermaker stuff from Lee, right? You can slow these blades down so you're getting the thump, opposed to, you know, like a double 10 or something of that nature. Some models just really keep your eye out for the lift and how slow you can work those baits. So you want to allow that thump. And the kind of the thought process with night fishing for muskies is, all right, they got to feel it, and they got to feel like it's close to them and they can catch up to it. That's the concept, right? Not
easy target.
Right. Okay, well, there was one there, but he went, oh, that was moving really fast, opposed to, okay, something's near me. It's giving me all the cues that it's potential prey. Okay, it's moving slow enough that I feel like it's
slow and steady.
Yeah, slow and steady, not
put the erratic stuff away at night. Yeah.
Right. And other things that have done well for me are the big slow cranks, right? It's not one I pull out too often, but that 9-inch Chalet Raider, the big slammer stuff, right? Your big flat-sided minnows, you can work them pretty dang slow, right?
Yeah.
And play that route. Play your topwaters, your blades. But I think out of the gate, Minnesota, you're going to have the potential. You know, especially on cruddy days. I think that's going to be pretty big. But anyway, got to go get on the boat, Jay Bird. We'll catch you next week. Sorry for all the social commentary, but just kind of opened up Pandora's box there, guys. Be kind to one another above all else. It's just fishing.
Live long and prosper, baby.
Live nanu nanu, Jay.
Right on, Steve.
Later.
Waiting in line, marking time, waiting on the pontoon's turn. Cause you can't launch a boat. Jackknife twice, Merck won't start. All the while, he took up the whole boat launch. Just for fun, he says, I don't fish. That's just the way it is. Some things will never change. That's just the way it is.